Hey, if you're enjoying this show, consider supporting us on our Patreon. You can get cool perks like access to these episodes a week before they go public, and you can pick an album for us to review. Any support is greatly appreciated, so if you feel inclined, go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress.
This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random and analyze it track by track. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And basically, if you don't know how the show works, we have no idea what album we're going to be listening to. We have a program queued up to help us pick the album. So all we have to do is hit the button and see what album we're going to listen to. So let's go ahead and do that. See what we're going to listen to this week. So the album we're going to be listening to is Lynyrd Skynyrd. Pronounced Lynyrd Skynyrd, or Lynyrd Skynyrd, I guess. Yes, so this is their debut album by the American band Lynyrd Skynyrd, released in 1973. Several of the album's songs remain among the band's most well-known, including Gimme Three Steps, Simple Men, Tuesday's Gone, and Free Bird, the last of which launched the band into national stardom. The album was certified gold on December 18th, 1974, and double platinum on July 21st, 1987. Most of the songs on the album had been used in the band's live repertoire for some time. The band found a rural rehearsal space near Jacksonville, Florida, which they nicknamed Hell House, due to the long hours spent there jamming in the intense Florida heat. And it was there that they composed and ran through the songs endlessly until they were perfected. Producer Al Kooper marveled at how well prepared the band were once they entered the studio. Every note was immutable and absolutely no improvisation was allowed. Cool. So I'm pretty sure where Lynyrd Skynyrd got their name is their gym teacher. Was named Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Lynyrd Skynyr.
Oh, was it Skynyr?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But was a gym teacher? I heard either principal or another, I don't know.
So someone at their school, at their high school, was named Lynyrd Skynyr.
Someone of authority.
Yeah. Okay, so let's... Okay, so the first song on the album is called I Ain't One. Cool ending.
It's a pretty decent song. They are a good band.
They are. You know, I was never a huge Skynyrd fan.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, hearing that, I think I appreciate them more than I did. Because, you know, you hear Freebird and Sweet Home Alabama on the radio, and it's like, yeah, okay, I get tired of those songs pretty quick.
Freebird's pretty good.
No, it's good. It's just played a lot.
Yeah. Well, Sweet Home Alabama is way more overplayed. And
yeah.
The song kind of annoys me on a couple different fronts, but yeah, it's also on the overplayed side.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's more so not the Skynyrd. It's sort of the crowd that they attract, it's not the band I hate, it's their fans.
Yeah.
But I don't hate their, you know, it's just people that I wouldn't necessarily hang out with.
Yeah. But no, that first track on this one for sure. Yeah, that's top quality.
Yeah.
And you could tell that they had that down pat. There wasn't anything. There's nothing sloppy about it, and yet it's still, every note carried the emotion. It didn't sound like it was over rehearsed. It sounded like it still carried like the every power or every note carried the you know, maximum power behind it. It's just they nailed that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounded like they had rehearsed it, but they didn't like it's not sloppy, but
it's not mechanical either.
It's not mechanical either. Right. It doesn't lose its feeling. It's right. That sweet spot. Which if you've ever played in a band or played any music, it takes a long time to get that to that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes a lot of work to get there. So absolutely.
I respect that.
Yeah. Yeah. So the next song is called Tuesday's Gone. This is a song that I do know because this is a song that was played throughout the movie Happy Gilmore. It was on that soundtrack. So that's where I first heard. I think that might be the first time I ever heard of Lynyrd Skynyrd. But anyway, this is Tuesday's Gone. Okay. I have some thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a good song.
Yep.
But there were some problems with it. Mainly, the vocals were too low in the mix. I couldn't really hear the vocals very well. The instruments were too high and the vocals were kind of buried. And, I think some of the middle section, the instrumental bit could have been cut down a little bit. It was a little too repetitive.
Yeah. I was going to say the song is 7.5 minutes long and it's a little repetitive. I think I remember first time I was hearing that, or at least, you know, back when, in like high school when I would put on the album occasionally, I would still think this song was a little on the repetitive side. I remember thinking by the time it's getting to the end, I'm going, okay, it's been on too long, this song. Yeah. I want to move on to the next one. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's not terrible.
No.
But it's not their best. It's not quite up to the standard of, say, their first one, which is honestly, first song was just kind of perfect.
Yeah.
Really good way to kick off the album.
Yeah. And this song, it's not a bad song. It just needs some of the fat trimmed off of it.
Yeah.
And
there's something about that. I think it's a keyboard sound, which on its own, I mean, it's very of the 70s, but it's got that sort of like, I don't know what the effect is, but it's got that new.
Well, I think that's a 12 string guitar.
That's not 12 string. That doesn't sound anything like a 12 string.
Are you sure? I'm pretty sure it's a guitar.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a 12 string. Anyway, it has that sort of like pew pew sound to it. And when you're going to do a 7-minute song, you try to stay away from potentially annoying sounds like that.
Yeah.
And especially if you're going to go through them over and over again.
Yeah.
Just little things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than that, song's largely fine. I mean, yeah.
It just needs some work, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, you can slag it all you want or whatever, but Freebird is a little longer than this, but it goes through different
phases.
Exactly. Yeah. It starts off slow and then it speeds up as it goes on.
It keeps your attention a whole lot better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it's the same chords over and over, and it's that the same sounds. You know, the guitar work, the guitar player was playing pretty good on it. Like they're all playing well. It's just, it's the same thing over and over and over.
Yeah. That bendy thing is actually sort of a neat, trick, and it's really neat, but again, it's one of those things that it gets repeated and then it sort of becomes one of those grating sounds after 7.5 minutes.
Exactly.
So
yeah,
you know,
so I would put this in the category of it's good song, just, you know, not great. Anyway,
needs a radio edit.
Yeah. So the next song, I think, was maybe the first single from the album. It's Give Me Three Steps. Well, that one was better.
Yeah.
That was cool. I like the double string guitar, like the Chuck Berry kind of guitar sound.
Yeah.
That's really well done. And I like the congas in there.
Mm.
Those were, I didn't really notice them at first, but it's like, oh, that's doing the job that percussion is supposed to do. Just kind of add the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Gives it a little extra energy in the background. Yeah.
Yeah.
Considering the story they're telling, it makes sense. It sort of adds that extra tension going on in the back.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah. No, this was a vast improvement over the last song. I think this is one of their more popular songs too. Like it was a big hit for them. Probably their first hit.
I think it was really. Their first major hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Great song. I don't really have much else to say about it. I mean, I don't really know what else. I mean, I feel like Southern rock kind of gets, sort of dismissed sometimes.
Depending on who you're talking to.
They just see it as, rowdy rednecks.
And that might be true, but mm-hmm. sometimes they're still really talented.
Yeah.
As the case may be. I mean, it's still really good rock and roll.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like it doesn't get taken as seriously as some other, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's my perspective, but I don't know if, especially Skynyrd, I don't feel like they get the respect that other bands do. Like maybe the Allman Brothers, kind of overshadowed them a little bit in terms of, because the Allman Brothers are seen as have the more respect, and I don't think Lynyrd Skynyrd really quite has that. You know what I mean? Like with critics.
I think I know what you mean. It's weird. I think Lynyrd Skynyrd's more well known, but
yeah,
all the Allman Brothers seem to have more
critical acclaim, I guess.
Yeah, more critical acclaim and more respect amongst other musicians and audiophiles and whatnot.
Yeah. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just the image of...
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. It's people are weird with their music, man.
Yeah, well, people like what they like, so...
That's very true. Anyway, the next song is Simple Man. I know this song. This was covered by someone else, a newer band. Maybe 10, 15 years ago or 20 years ago, I guess now.
Maybe.
I don't remember who. But the next song up is Simple Man. See, that's the way I wanted Tuesday's Gone to be mixed.
Yeah.
With the vocals front and center and the band supporting that rather than the vocals being buried in the mix.
Right.
How it should have been done. That was a good song. I've known that song. I've heard it. I don't know where. It's almost as long as Tuesday's Gone, but it was a little repetitive, but it was still interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely they cut the fat out of that one.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't drone on and on and on, and there's nothing particularly annoying that repeats itself,
right?
Like Tuesday's Gone does. Like it doesn't have that that weird sort of chimey keyboard sound, and that and the bendy guitar, which is actually kind of cool, but gets
it's
kind
of much of it.
Yeah, it's too much of it. I mean, it gives that sort of wow wow wow, and that makes you feel dizzy after a while.
Right.
So
And this song, it's it has some dynamics in it. It, you know, starts off slower and it kind of builds into something a little more intense. The tempo doesn't change, but it's the, I guess the intensity or the tension kind of builds towards the end.
Right.
You know? So that was interesting as well. This was miles ahead of Tuesday's Gone. I mean, you know, it's just the band playing. It's I feel like the other song, Tuesday's Gone, was a little overproduced. Like there was too much going on.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, whereas this was a little more, you know, no pun intended, this was a little more simple production. Where it's just exactly what the song needs, nothing more. Whereas the other song, I feel like they just kind of got a little carried away.
Yeah.
You know, a little too self-indulgent, I guess. Because, you know, and I'm sure that the lyrics of that song are good and they're, you know, they mean something. But with this song, because the vocals are so present, the feeling of the song is much more clear.
Yep.
You know, at least that's how I see it. I don't know.
No, I think that makes sense. Yeah, you can concentrate when a song wants to like shut off your brain. It's not, I mean, other than maybe, you know, psychologically ingraining into your head somehow. I don't know, but for the most part, you're not paying very close attention to what they're even trying to get across.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in songs like I Ain't the One or Gimme Three Steps, the lyrics almost don't really matter because it's just a, you know, it's a rock and roll song.
Right.
But when you're slowing it down a little bit, you want the audience to pay attention, maybe not necessarily even all the lyrics, but you want them to pay attention to the vocals so they at least get the idea of the emotion behind the song.
Yeah.
Sorry, I kind of cut you off there.
No, it's fine. I think I got my point across and you did.
Cool. All right, so let's move on to the next song. This is a pretty short album, only 8 songs. The next song is called Things Going On. That was cool. I like that.
Yeah, it's a decent one.
Yeah. That, I think maybe that might be my favorite so far. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. I think that first one actually kind of hit me up the side of the head, and I was just like, okay, yeah, that might be the best thing I've ever heard them do.
Yeah.
And I have the album here at home. Mm-hmm. I haven't put it on in a long time, but I'd forgotten how good that first song is.
Right.
It's just, it's kind of perfect. And I don't know if they've ever put out anything that quite hits me the same way as that one does.
Yeah.
Honestly. But there's definitely some good stuff going on. And Things Going On is some things going on.
This was a little more a country blues kind of thing, which was cool, and maybe that's why I like it. This is weird to say, but I don't expect country and blues from Lynyrd Skynyrd. blatant, I guess. I don't know. I always thought of them as more of a rock and roll band.
Yeah, this is pretty par for the course for them, though.
Yeah,
that's true. And considering where they're from, country and blues is from that area, too. I mean, and rock and roll was basically sort of a marriage of country and blues to begin with. So,
yeah, that's actually a good point. Where they're from. I don't know if there was something in the water, because they're from Northern Florida.
Yeah.
And there were so many artists that made it big from that region. There was these guys, Stephen Stills, obviously Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Allman Brothers.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a lot of bands that that came out of that region. In the
a lot of quality talent
throughout the 70s. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's true. Yeah, especially in that early 70s through mid 70s sort of period. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Well, Stephen Stills was even earlier than that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess there's just a music scene there.
Yeah.
Most of it's, you know, they kind of go off and do other things. But you do notice it seems to be an area where people will kind of conglomerate to, you know, Woodshed for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before they have to, like, rocket off to L.A. to record or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing.
Yeah. It's, you know, when you think about... you know, there's the obvious music scenes like throughout the states. There's, you know, New York and
right.
Detroit and Seattle and different pockets throughout the years have had different things, but nobody really ever talks about Florida. But there's, for some reason, there's a Don Felder from the Eagles is another one. Yeah, for some reason, that's just that area, particularly northern Florida. A lot of rock bands came out of that area, but it never really gets talked about the way that other music scenes did.
Yep.
So yeah,
there's probably lots of places like that though. If you really, you know, go through the list of everybody out there.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's kind of it kind of reminds me of the area that we grew up in a little bit in terms of it being a rural area. There's not a lot to do. What do? Start a band.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. There's a certain amount of that.
Yeah. So, yeah. And a bunch of rednecks hanging around and you don't want them to beat you up. So you entertain them with music.
Right. You know? True.
That's kind of our area. Yeah.
In a lot of ways, yes. It's, yeah. There's parallels for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, moving on to the, we got three songs left. The next song is called Mississippi Kid. I don't know what that was at the end.
I think it was just a snare drum.
Yeah. But I don't know why. It sounded like a machine gun or something. I don't know.
I think it's meant to be sort of like mimicking like a rattlesnake or something like that.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Or something like that. At least that's sort of... It was a really strange sound, and I actually thought it was like we're suddenly going to be jumping into the next song or something like that. But
yeah.
But I think it's a rattlesnake sort of thing that they're trying to do.
Yeah. Anyway, that was cool. I like that. I like the mandolin and just the front porch sort of feel of it.
That Appalachian folk sort of feel to it. Yeah.
No, that was cool. Sort of acknowledging the roots, I guess.
It sort of reminded me of some of the things you might hear on some of the Led Zeppelin albums.
Yeah.
And some of their later things where they were less, you know, less straight up like electric blues, hard rock sort of thing, where they would actually experiment with things. You know, they pulled out the mandolins and banjos and whatever and decided to do some stuff like that. But they're thinking more of like rural, you know, England, whereas this is very rural US.
Yeah. You know, yeah, it's funny. It's the mandolin is actually, it's an odd instrument. You know, it's an Italian instrument.
Right.
But it, you know, if it's played a certain way, it evokes like, you know, Italian music. But if it's played in another way, it sounds like the American South.
Right. Or rural England.
Or rural England, yeah.
Because, it made its way around and it got incorporated into all sorts of different sort of rootsy folk music.
Yeah.
From different you know, locations of the world.
And I'm sure it's, I wonder how that happened. Like, was it like immigrants from Italy coming over and just like, you know,
I think it probably migrated to England first.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And then it came over with, a lot of immigrants from that, British Isles area. And then it just sort of, you know, became adopted and the mandolins began. They were around when people started doing their music production when they're around, and they had their banjos, and believe it or not, the guitar didn't come along till later, so the mandolin was actually around first.
Mm-hmm.
Along with banjos, and before the guitar was popular, apparently the banjo was really popular.
Yeah.
It was the popular instrument in the very early 20th century. The guitar kind of slowly took over after.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even it's funny you think about, it's funny how the way music is in terms of like the different regions it travels to, because, you know, you say like, the mandolin coming to from Italy to England, and then England over to the United States, and then the guitar kind of, you know, taking over. And then in the 50s, there was a style of music called skiffle, which is sort of like rock and roll, but it's very influenced by like American like bluegrass. And it's funny how like the instruments, you know, came from England to the US, and then it was influencing the Americans did something different with it. And then that influenced the people in England to do
absolutely
that, you know, it's just kind of like ping ponging back and forth.
Yeah. But yeah, it's got partly to do with that, the evolution of the instrument and whatnot too. Guitar being a Spanish instrument primarily. Mm-hmm. It's got, you know, relations to like some lutes that you would have found in like medieval England, though honestly they're closer related to like I can't remember what they call some of those things, but you can still get them, especially if you know you're in the scene for like, you know, traditional folk music or something like that. But for the most part, the guitar as it was a Spanish instrument, and it seemed to have come over probably with, you know, the Spanish and Portuguese, what do you call it? When they occupied the, lower, North America and, you know, the Southern Americas and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And, so the guitar kind of migrated north from there. And then kind of took over,
right?
And then made its way back to England. So things are kind of moving in different directions.
Yeah, it's like it's a triangle of influence. Yeah, it's fascinating how that kind of happens. It's I forget what I was going to say, but basically, yeah, it's like you can hear an instrument, and it's played in a certain way, and, you know,
it's very evocative of its region.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you played it another way, it's evocative of that region. And even the guitar, I mean, you know, Spanish guitar doesn't sound anything like Jimi Hendrix.
Nope.
But it's the same instrument.
Basically.
You know?
I mean, in its very crude, rudimentary form, yes. Yeah. It definitely evolved over the years, though.
Yeah, oh yeah.
When they started, like, putting jolts of electricity into it, there was a lot of evolution to go through.
Yeah.
But yes.
Yeah. We could get into the whole history of
it. Absolutely.
You know, we don't want to do that right now. But, anyway, moving on to the second to last song. This is a song called Poison Whiskey. Okay, I think I have a new favorite.
That one, I think that's probably my second favorite.
Yeah.
It doesn't beat the very first song, but that one is definitely like the closest it's come.
Yeah.
That's a really good song.
That's a really good song. Really good groove. I like the combination of the organ and the guitar.
Yeah. The song is very, it reminded me of like the James Gang.
Yes. The
Funk 48, Funk 49 sort of thing they're doing there.
Yeah.
But that organ actually reminded me of like, it sounded a lot like my dad's band back in the day. So, Dave, his organ playing sounded a lot like that and how it would be like blend seamlessly with like the rest of the band.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's just a really cool sound.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just, just like, almost like a Chicago blues, I guess.
A little bit, but swampier.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else. I mean, that's just those. Yeah, you're right. Those two songs, the first one and this one, are the two best songs on the album by far. not to say the other ones aren't great, but, you know.
Yeah, there's a couple of like, I don't know, maybe it's just the way we're programmed, but we have a tendency to like stuff that doesn't quite make it the radio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it was a little too hard-edged for the average listener or something like that. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, it's possible. I don't know. I will never figure out the record industry and the decisions that they make.
Yeah. I mean, we can sort of follow the logic a little bit to a point.
Yeah.
But particularly why it does, yeah, where some things are, we're always just a little bit off-center for what makes it like really popular, and it just always comes off a little bit strange. It's like, that's the one you picked?
Yeah,
that's the one everybody, I guess. It sounds like the thing that would be popular, but it never resonates with us the same way.
Yeah. What about track 5? You should have put track 5 out.
Track 5 is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've arrived at the final song on the album, and it is it's the common joke that
people yell at things to be funny.
Yeah, it's not funny. Oh, I honestly
a little funny.
You know what
it
I think
was?
It was funny. You know what I think would be funny though?
What?
When if someone yells out Freebird, you actually play it.
Oh yeah, well,
you know,
yeah,
because when people yell at Freebird, they don't expect the band to actually play it. They're just being an asshole. So I think it would be funny to actually play the full 9-minute version if someone yells it out.
Yeah. Well, heck. Oh, geez. I was suddenly remembering. There's footage of sometime in the early '80s. There's NRBQ's playing a bar, and they're playing the Edmund Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. And they're just sort of like, you know, playing it around. They're not entirely taking it completely serious. And of course it's a super long song and the audience is like pelting things at the band because they want them to sort of end. Yeah. And then finally the band ends and then the crowd is cheering for them to come back on. So then they come back on and start up the Edmund Fitzgerald
from the beginning
and are already pelting things at the band again. And you can just see it in this, especially Terry Adams' eyes. You could just say that he's just enjoying trolling the audience at this point. So, yeah.
That's funny. Anyway, so here we go. Here is Freebird. So the difference between that song and Tuesday's Gone is, so like half of that song is the instrumental jam at sort of the ending. And it is the same three chords, that ascending chord pattern underneath everything. But, the guitars are the lead guitars are changing things up just enough to keep you wondering, oh, what are they going to do next?
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the band is changing things up. Like halfway through, the drummer, you know, he's playing, like, you know, playing with a crash cymbal, and then he switches to like what Ringo does on Get Back, like that kind of galloping military right. thing. So the intensity is building. So that changes. And there was also a point where the whole band drops out and it was just the lead guitars playing. So there's enough changes that although it's the same chords repeating through the whole thing, there's enough things changing that it keeps you interested.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, just kind of no dynamics and just kind of playing the same thing over and over and over.
Exactly. And yeah, and it's still got that similar like power ballad thing going in the first half of the song.
Yeah.
But it's not too long.
Right.
You know, if you're listening for the first time, you don't expect that song to suddenly turn into what it eventually turns into. And the transition is very, very smooth.
Yeah.
It's kind of beautiful, actually.
I actually remember the first time I heard this song.
Yeah.
I was in our basement. I think my dad had Q107 on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was downstairs just on the computer doing something, and the radio was on in the background, and the song came on, and I had heard Tuesday's Gone because it was in that Happy Gilmore movie.
Right.
So I was already kind of familiar with that song, but I hadn't heard that song in a while. So I thought this was that song.
Right.
Because it has a similar intro.
Right.
And, but then once that the jam started, I distinctly remember turning around and looking at the radio. I don't know what I was looking at, but I remember all of a sudden my attention was focused on the music. It's like, what is this?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It was like a triple guitar threat. Plus there's that acoustic going on underneath.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's like I always kind of got the popularity of this song.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is kind of epic. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of why it became sort of like a joke.
Yeah.
Because I think for a while there it was a popular song to cover.
Yeah.
For a bit.
Well, I can imagine, I can see why. I mean, yeah. First of all, for a guitar player to play this song, and just to let loose for 5 minutes. I mean,
it's self-indulgent,
but it's also fun.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah. If you can pull it off. Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's, there's another movie and it's more recent, but it's probably closer to about 15 years old now. If not a little older, it's got Orlando Bloom and Kirsten Dunst in it. And I'm trying to remember what the movie's called. But at one point, his cousin, there's like this family reunion, and Susan Sarandon's in it too.
Oh, is it anyway, Elizabethtown?
Might be it. That might be it. Anyway, his cousin's finally got his band together and they start playing this song. And they've got like this model bird hanging over the stage thing. But anyway, I think they've got like flash pots go off or something like that, sets the bird on fire and it starts swinging and sets the venue on fire. And right. Yeah, it's, and they're still playing the song through it, like
right.
during the, you know, epic guitar solo part. So it's yeah. just like chaos mm-hmm. with a, you know, a theme music going on behind it. It's pretty good. Anyway,
that's pretty funny. Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely, like, if I were in a band, I probably wouldn't cover this song just because of that, because it's sort of cliche at this point, I guess.
Right.
You know, but like I said, if someone yelled it out, I think it would be funny to actually play the whole thing, because,
yeah,
you know, they're just being an asshole, and I think it would be funny just to do it.
No, what you do is that you continue on the first half of the song for as long as you can.
Yeah.
And as they're expecting the solo to come up, it never quite comes.
Yeah. Yeah. you have a clock.
Yeah, you it starts clock to sound more counting, like Tuesday's Gone. Yeah,
or you have a clock above the stage and it's counting down because everybody knows that it's what is it 9 minutes long. So you have a clock counting down 9 minutes, so they know. So you have this certain amount of time, but you only play the ballad part for 9 minutes.
That would be brilliant. Piss people off so much.
Yeah.
Trolling. Anyway.
But yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, it's a cliche at this point, Freebird, but it's, you know,
it is a when quality
when you actually listen to it, I definitely appreciate it. And, you know, appreciating because like I said earlier, when in the description of the album, there was no improvisation allowed.
Right.
They had to have everything worked out. So that means that they had all those parts that are in Freebird. They worked those out beforehand. They weren't like just coming up with it. They actually sat down and planned everything out. So,
Interesting.
It's interesting. It's that. I'm sure they're great, musicians, and they could improvise, but it's a hard thing to.
I just didn't want it to sound sloppy. I think.
Yeah, exactly. But it's hard to plan something out and make it sound improvised.
Right.
You know. So
yeah, takes a playing with a lot of. It takes a certain amount of playing confidence to pull that off for sure.
And that's why I don't think they get the respect that they deserve. It's like they're actually really, really capable, not just musicians, but songwriters and arrangers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sometimes they hit and sometimes they don't, as evidence with songs on this album.
But so most bands are like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. And but not most bands can't quite pull off a lot of bands, their great peaks aren't as high. They come with all the ups and downs, but the ups aren't necessarily as up as this band's up periods were, mm-hmm. if you get what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then unfortunately their career was cut short because of the plane crash, but that's unfortunate.
And apparently what's his name was supposed to, get buried wearing a Neil Young t-shirt.
Yeah.
Because they were always.
That was a rumor. I don't think that's true.
Yeah, I don't think it actually happened. He said he was going to do it, but I don't think it wound up happening.
I think that was just something he said to the press. Just
probably,
to, have fun with them.
Apparently, Neil Young never cared about any of this stuff. He actually at one point played the song Sweet Home Alabama.
Oh, yeah. No, he had no ill feelings towards them. He actually liked the song.
Yeah.
He wasn't mad or anything.
No, it's funny. I think there was more animosity on their end than on his end. He just didn't care.
I think their thing was, I think they took offense to Neil Young saying, I think they maybe misinterpreted what Neil Young was trying to say. And I think they thought that he was saying all Southern people were racist. And I think that's where they were kind of like, wait a minute. No, we're not. I think
it could be
kind of what they were. I think that's what they were angry about. It's like you're kind of stereotyping us.
Yeah. Which I don't think was
I don't think that was his intention, but I think that's how they interpreted it.
Yeah, maybe it was like there's Southern Man and Alabama. And I've always said that I thought Southern Man was a better song than Sweet Home Alabama, and that's just a personal opinion.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a more well-written song. And there was another there was a documentary about, and I wish I could remember her name because this is so unfair. And the documentary was basically about her, but not strictly about her. It was about black backup singers who are involved with recording things. And they had
Is that called like 20 Feet from Stardom or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's the one.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think they, anyway, she was actually a backup singer on the, on Sweet Home Alabama. Mm-hmm. And she felt very uncomfortable with, you know, I mean, she was more well aware of all this history that, that Neil Young was singing about in this stuff.
Yeah.
And she later on would play, sing Southern Man, her own version of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she always felt a little bit uncomfortable with that. But yeah, she was involved with all sorts of stuff. She was the one, she was singing. Yeah, she was on the Rolling Stone. She was the one on Give Me Shelter, and she was singing the rape murder part.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think her name is Mary.
Yes.
Mary something. Mary and Clayton or something like that?
Something like that. But her, she actually like recorded hits, but the hits were credited to somebody else at some point.
Sort of like
that was in the '60s,
like a Milli Vanilli situation.
Sort of. I think it was like it was a well-known band that this song that she because again her voice was somewhat similar to some of these others, but when they released the song, they released it under the name of this other band.
Oh, okay.
Because they figured they could probably, you know, make more money off it with this band attached to it than her name, which is just dirty and conniving and sick.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you that know, happened.
You know, it's funny, we talk about how the record industry has gotten greedy and all that, but they've always been terrible.
Of course.
You know, they've always
They've been, you know, as soon as anybody figures they can make money on it, they'll try to figure out any way to make money on it.
Yeah.
And not all of them are very honest.
No.
So.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, look, just, you know, look at the, I mean, since rock and roll started, it's the record industry has been corrupt.
Right.
And it's, it hasn't gotten better. They've just gotten more clever with how to get away with it.
Unfortunately, they've become less experimental. They don't want to.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, well. It takes an outsider to come out and do something. And then the industry goes, oh, that's really popular now. Everybody has to do that.
Yeah.
And no deviation from it.
Exactly. And until people get bored with it and they move on to the next thing.
But I've noticed that with like almost every industry out there. I mean, you even look at like cars and furniture and stuff like. Everything is white or washed out gray. It's just like they're afraid to put color in anything, or they're afraid to do a line that's at all, you know, off-putting to anybody. Yeah. Everything has to be like all appealing across the board. Mm-hmm. And they're afraid that if they do anything that gives it like any character, that they'd alienate too big of the population to make money off of them.
Yeah.
And it's kind of bullshit because it doesn't necessarily work that way. But I've noticed that with trends, it's like most of these industries are, they've gotten to the point where they are afraid to take any chances now because they have to maximize profits to the very, like everything is calculated to such a degree that everything has to be like, you know, mass appeal. And mass appeal is very, you know, boring. Too much of it for sure.
Absolutely. Anyway, we've gotten way off topic.
No, but I mean it's
No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
But
I mean,
music is the same way.
Yeah.
And you notice that with even movies and anything. Everything's gotta be everything and yet not much of anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I worked in a movie theater for 4 years. And occasionally there would be an interesting movie come along, but it was mostly remakes of older movies,
right? Or
comic book movies, like Marvel movies,
right?
Or big broad comedies,
right?
That seemed to be the only those were the only things that would come.
Exactly. And the fact that there's movies where they're remaking remakes. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, it's that thing. It's just they're afraid to take a chance. They already know this made money before. So look, do it again and make money again.
Yeah.
But if someone comes in with a new script, they don't want to touch that because it's the unknown.
Right.
It could be great, but they don't touch it because it's unknown. They can't calculate it.
Right. And those movies do get made, but they get, you know, they're independent releases. They get a limited run in the theaters because they can't afford to.
Occasionally one will make it. And of course it becomes Oscar bait or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the main players, the big guys, they don't want to touch it because they can't.
They're afraid to take the risk. They're
afraid to take the risk.
They may make money on it, but they're afraid to not make money on it.
Exactly. And it's too far in that direction.
Yeah.
And ultimately it's going to be their undoing.
Yeah. I mean, look, I understand it. I understand the mentality, but I just, you know, it would be nice if they just took a chance on something every once in a while.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause again, like, you know, 50 years ago, they were taking chances. Like everybody was taking chances.
Oh, this,
everything
this,
had like a commercial this, like, things were still, there were still interesting things amongst it.
Well, I mean, look at the 70s movies in the 70s. I mean, like Martin Scorsese films, like Taxi Driver or Raging Bull or all those Robert De Niro movies, you know, they weren't guarantees.
Nope.
But the studio took a chance. Star Wars. He had a hell of a time trying to get that made.
Of course. Now it's, you know, they can pump out one of those movies and they can never quite really make a great one.
No. They can make one that will make money.
Yeah. They can make a decent one, but there's always things like there's always little decisions within the movie that are disappointments, but ultimately are made because they don't want to take too many chances on things. It's a little bit too safe.
Yeah.
That's just the way it goes. Exactly. And that's most people's gripes with, people's gripes with it is that every time they try to come up with a great Star Wars movie and it's always lacking. That's why it's lacking. They don't want to take a chance. They don't want to do something new with it or, you know, it's like they're afraid to make it too great. Cause it's, I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that was a tangent away from Lynyrd Skynyrd, but anyway, that's all right.
Well, I'm done stomping on the tangerine crate now.
Yeah.
Soapbox, whatever.
But anyway, I getting back to the album, I like this album. There were a few weak spots, but
ultimately, you know, it's a good album.
Yeah, exactly. And I think they deserve more respect than they have gotten as musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess we'll end the podcast there. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, you can check us out on, or you can drop us a line at polyphonicpressmusic@gmail.com. Check out polyphonicpress.com. And if you want to help out the show, you can do that by going to buymeacoffee.com/polyphonicpress. And that's about it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.